Hey there, Flareheads. Welcome back again. This is Kevin Crowder, founder of Business Flare, and your host. Today is our third part in a series on the Talent Wars of a conversation that I had with Sherita Allen and Ken Stapleton. Sherita is with Allen Economic Development Partners in Chattanooga, and Ken is the owner of Ken Stapleton & Associates in Miami and Cincinnati. Today we're going to talk about the evolving workspace. You know, what does this mean for governments, how the workspace is evolving, and what does it mean for businesses? Because that workspace is going to evolve in very different ways for the two, but in many cases they may be competing for the same talent. It's also going to have an impact on communities and all different types of communities, but especially downtowns. You've heard us talk about remote work versus work from home. Another thing that has a big impact on downtowns. We talked about leadership and management and entrepreneurship. We also will talk about talent attraction and how do you attract talent. And we'll even wrap up our conversation, not just about talent, but just talking about economic development perspectives. And those will wrap up episode 4 and 5 of the series.
Yeah, but I still think there will be companies that want commercial office space. Like,
I think so too. I think I've gotten this question a lot in communities where we're working. And when we're looking at sort of our market potential and our estimates on what we think is going to happen in the different, you know, office or retail. And I don't think office is going away at all. I think it could even expand because it's going to be different. It's not going to be the same, but it doesn't mean it's going to shrink. One thing we have seen, and we saw this, we ran for downtown Doral office space. One thing I've been seeing a bit of is not a lot of return to the office yet, but no one's giving up their space.
Right.
And so we haven't seen the vacancies go up because part of that is you've just still got a lot of uncertainty.
Right.
You know, some industries where you are going to see a return to the office, and we saw, you know, some articles over the last year about, especially in New York and in the financial sector, JP Morgan and some of those firms, you know, saying you are coming back to the office. And they've had to kind of make adjustments on some of the timing of that. But in some of those industries where you will have people coming back to the office, you know, you may see the need for more office space because now everybody's got to spread out more.
I was going to say, and remember your next thought, but I was going to ask whether this is going to help folks transition to sort of the 4-day work week. Because I know years ago, everybody was trying to get to this 4-day work week where you were staggering staff. And I can remember, I want to say it was I worked with a firm at one point and it was, I remember I was Monday through Thursday, 10-hour days. And then at some point in the year, I flipped and then I was Tuesday through Friday. Like, and it worked because the office was always fully staffed, but it was just a better way of working to kind of do all the work in 4 days. I mean, will that ever happen?
Well, so we, you know, as you know, we subscribe to Placer, the location data service provider. And with that foot traffic info, we not only can we look at customer behavior, we're able to look at employee behavior. So we can look at a downtown or we can look at a business and we can see, you know, where their employees live, what's their labor shed, what are the hours they work, what are the days they work. And we just looked at one for a technology park in Texas that's in a community that we're competing for work in. And so as part of our proposal, we said, well, let's take a look at what's happening in that technology park that they own. And we found that. We found that your foot traffic of the workforce to this technology park on Monday was the same as on Tuesday, was the same as on Wednesday, was the same as on Thursday, and it was half on Friday, what it was the rest of the week. And so we thought, yep, they're allowing some work from home at that time, or maybe they're, you know, and even it's hard to tell within even Monday to Tuesday. Even when they're the same, it may not always be the same people. They may be, you know, people may have 2 or 3 days off and they're kind of coming through. And of course, the other thing could be there's more than one company in that technology park. So it could be one is on a 4-day work week and one is not. But you do see some of those trends. The place that I think there can be office opportunity is going to be in the smaller towns. The smaller towns who are able to compete for quality of life and get the talent, they are going to have the ability for new office development,
I believe. Yeah.
We talked about this even down in Pinecrest. You know, when if you're commuting from Pinecrest and South Dade to downtown, when you've been working from home, you know, a lot of people that are working from home and work remote, they're going to get sick of it too. I mean, you know, just personally, I don't like working from home. I'd like having an office to come to. I think I would start wanting to just get the hell away from my house if I was there so much. But so I think as this progresses, and especially professionals, you know, I think that you may have things like independent solo practitioner attorneys who had an office in downtown Miami because they needed to be close to the courthouse or different things. You know, they may start making a quality of life decision. You know, I can have an office here in Pinecrest that's 5 minutes from my house, and I don't have to deal with that because, you know, we're not going to need to be downtown as much. So I think the smaller
communities. Well, I can have my client meetings on Zoom now because everybody's
right. Comfortable with
it. Right. But I still do want that place that for some people just feel like they're going to be more productive. So I think it's those smaller communities who are successful in getting the talent there because they offer the quality of life they're working for. I think they are going to have a good advantage in building more office space, and maybe more co-working space or shared office space for these true remote workers.
And to your point, I think you're absolutely right. The numbers still aren't clear to everybody about what percentage of workers want to go to the office, because we know there is a cohort of them that does not want to work from home anymore for whatever reason. It could be social. It could be the home environment really isn't conducive. That they really don't enjoy working from home. I do think we're going to see the co-working companies gear up again. I've got a little insider insights on that. And I think, you know, so you're going to start to see them get more and more active. I think we're going to see them in different kinds of places though, right? So to date, they've been in what I'll call the popular places. And I think you're going to start to see them in the less popular places. Mm-hmm. And you're going to start to see them, to your point, Kevin, they're going to start to understand the opportunities in the smaller downtowns, right. And even in, you know, what I'll call the rural downtowns, right? The main streets of the United States, whether they're in North Carolina or, you know, Bozeman or wherever they are, you know, they are going to understand that this new kind of way these multiple new ways of working are creating demand for a new kind of third space that they can probably provide. You know, with great internet service, with interaction at the level that you desire, is the way I'll say it, right? Right. And with people having an opportunity to meet new partners in whatever kind of gig work or small business they're running, right? Because we all know that that's part of what we have to do as small business owners.
Right. Right?
We are constantly doing business development and looking for new kinds of opportunities. It's the way the entrepreneurial mind works, right? You can't do that sitting in your home office. Sorry. Does not.
Right.
I think there's all these trends that are going to hit, and they're going to hit hard and fast. I don't think this is going to eke out. I think this coming year is going to be a very disruptive year for governments, for big businesses, for lots of communities.
Right.
Downtowns are going to struggle in ways that they didn't realize they were going to struggle.
Right. I think, and kind of when you're talking about that sort of shared use, you know, we have this office next door that we use as it's sort of design studio production. It's really a production room. You know, we can use it as a Zoom room. We've got a green screen. We've got a plotter. We've got all of our production stuff. And I at one point had thought, well, you know, I could rent that out for someone to come in and use when I'm here, and they could have access to the plotter and then full Adobe suite on the computer in there. They could do green screen. They could do, you know, Zooms or whatever. And again, it's almost a side hustle. We actually we've kind of where we've evolved is we're focused on kind of getting the you know, getting the 501c3 for the Business Flair Academy, our nonprofit arm. What I thought is rather than get into trying to rent that out, it's not our core business. So that's kind of, I think, how my thinking of extra ways we could use that space evolves. But again, it's you're right, Ken. Sitting at home, it's hard to come up with some of these the creativity that you need to do some of this. So just finding ways to fill those gaps. It's almost another just element of the gig economy in how you use real estate.
It's
the office version of Airbnb, except absolutely. We're talking about sort of you got some lease issues. You're going to have a very little different thing that you might have to deal with depending on your lease terms and all. But
people could also be renting out other people's garages to do business meetings.
Sure.
Right. So it doesn't have to be in a commercial building even. Right. I just, the kinds of interactions, talent is going to be operating differently, but they're still going to need to interact.
Yes.
And they're going to need different kinds of places to do that. Plenty of stuff still happens in the bar and golf course and, I guess now on the pickleball court, the truth is, if you're really going to sit down and do the ideation and go through a design thinking process or whatever, you're not going to do that in somebody's house. You need a place to do it. I know we were looking at some of that at the University of Cincinnati and the Innovation Hub, and we had a couple of providers that we were looking at, and we had people on staff to help with some of that stuff. But we were working mostly with big corporations, but I think there's a big miss there. I think this army of entrepreneurial ants is going to be driving a lot more than anyone ever thought would happen.
I completely agree with that. And I think what I've seen here is we have sort of the startup space that's in most innovation districts and innovation centers. We have new space that is what historically would have been sort of the class B and C office space, but it's co-working. I call it co-working space for adults. and so you're not going to have, well, I don't know. One of them does have a beer keg in it. But you're not going to have the same sort of, rope chairs hanging from the ceiling and neon colors. But it's co-working space for not startups, but established businesses. But they're not trying to be in the old school class B and C office space, which has no amenities. And it's just sort of, you come in the lobby, you go to your office, you shut your door, and that's your space. This is sort of that new co-working space, but it really and truly is for more mature businesses. So we're seeing some of that. And then we're starting to see more kind of co-working maker space. And so it's a place for folks who are making things to kind of go rent an office or rent a cage, so to speak, where they can build things and work on things and equipment's there and they can run equipment and they can leave their supplies and their artist gear and stuff kind of set up to work on a project. And so they're typically short-term rental, they're for particular projects or they're for folks who are prototyping things. But again, sort of in garage spaces, buildings that, 5 years ago would have been built out, but now everybody's kind of in flux with the market and the way prices are going. It's sort of like, hey, if I hold out, I can make a lot more money. I'm getting crazy offers. I think I'm going to wait to see if I can get even crazier offers. But in the meantime, I'm going to do some short-term rental stuff for folks that are trying to make things or need industrial space or are dealing with blowtorches and it's zoned industrial. So let me just kind of do this makeshift makerspace until we figure out what the market's going to do in this particular region. So we're seeing sort of this evolution of both commercial, of both office and industrial space. It's kind of interesting right now.
And maybe, yeah, and maybe some of that comes with getting away from it's it kind of happened to us in Miami Beach. It's kind of getting away from the fantasy and the end thing to back to sort of reality and business efficiency. You know, at one time when I worked for Miami Beach, we had the Latin American headquarters of all five major music labels were on South Beach. Yeah. We had MTV Latin America. We had Nickelodeon Latin America. We had Discovery Networks. We had, you know, Cisneros Television. We had all of these, you know, because they had to be on South Beach. It was South Beach. You know, they didn't want to be around bankers in white shirts and ties down on Brickell. But as those industries evolved and things happened with music industry and with TV, well, MTV didn't renew their lease. Nickelodeon Latin America didn't renew their lease. They moved to Blue Lagoon. They moved places where, you know, the being at the end thing and on Lincoln Road and South Beach no longer made sense at $40 a foot for their operations.
Plus parking, plus and traffic.
Yes. And so when we talk about co-working, yeah, and the parking expense and all of that. But when we talk about the co-working and the co-working for adults, I'd love that. But it's sort of like, it's almost, is it running parallel and in tandem with the aging? I would say maturing is the wrong word, but maybe not
adulting.
The adulting of the millennials, which the millennials were the fantasy of every city. We want the millennials, get millennials
still
downtown.
It is
still in many cities, but that's why the millennials all love Wynwood. So we're going to build our co-working in Wynwood, and yeah, we're going to put beer kegs in and we're going to do meetings across the street at the brewery and all of these things. But now, you know, okay, it's time to get to work, guys, you know, and so I think it's, you know, it's, you do see that sort of evolution, as, you know, as maybe that, at least in some areas, that's not sort of the, you know, the biggest focus is, we want to be where everyone else is, and we have to do it from that sort of image standpoint, rather than, you know, okay, how are we going to grow and be most efficient and most successful?
Well, and it's funny, the last piece that we're also seeing now is obviously trade schools are back in Tennessee, lots of funding for trade schools that's coming up, but we're also starting to see organizations plan for co-working space for contractors who have historically been working either out of their homes. And I think some of it, and I saw some of this when I worked in Miami, and I've seen some of this in Chattanooga, and it's where you've got sort of the electrician who used to work for a major company or work for the city. His side gig was working, was doing electrical stuff on the side. Now all of a sudden he wants to kind of phase out, start his own business. All of his equipment's in the garage. The wife says, you've got to get a space. You can't work out of the garage anymore. And so again, just looking for industrial space for trucks or equipment. And we're starting to see, and some of it's born out of small business development centers sort of, you know, calling the city and saying, are there any spaces that the city has where we could stand up sort of this co-working space that's for trades, where they can set up their address, put their license there, receive their mail there, potentially store equipment there, participate in training classes. You know, there's an opportunity for them to hire or work with apprentices out of the shop. And so we're starting to see sort of this workforce component, all the sort of the folks in the workforce ecosystem here come together to figure out, how do we start really and truly building trade and building up these, and they're not startups, they're experienced tradesmen, but how do we help them to kind of build up their companies, recognizing that we have a lot of tradesmen who are aging out. Like, they're going to be retiring. Like, we've got roofers who are like, I don't want to climb roofs anymore. Like plumbers who are like, I'm not getting under a house to do plumbing anymore. I'm too old. Like, but I've got to start finding junior folks to come in that I can train. So it's that,
it's that kind of stuff. And how do you get those junior folks and those younger folks in those trades transitioned into entrepreneurship in those trades, rather than just being a journeyman or just being an employee? And I love that idea because it's, you know, another one, and maybe this is being done. And if not, maybe someone here's a business idea. You know, when I was in the Army, I loved working on my vehicles, working on my truck or cars. And I loved doing that. And when I was stationed overseas, our base had a garage that had about 8 bays in it, and you could take your car there and work on it. And they had the lifts, they had the tools, they had everything that you needed to work on your car. And then probably about 10 years ago, I saw this old, I think originally a gas station, then a mechanic shop, here in Miami on 79th Street out west. And I started thinking, I thought, you know, I could buy that, renovate it. And I actually did like the financials for how much everything would cost. And then I could have 4 bays and I could rent them out just to home mechanics, because there's certain tools. I mean, I have a lot of tools, but there's things I don't have because they're either too expensive or, I mean, I can't put a car lift in my garage. And there's certain things I thought I could rent this out by the hour for people to come and work on their vehicle. But, you know, I never did anything with it. And then about a year later, this ad pops up and there's this place in Hialeah called Garage Yourself. And that's exactly what it is. You can go there. They've got all the tools you need. They've got a paint spray booth. They've got everything there. And so it's a great concept, and God bless them. And I hope they're doing well. But what you're talking about is for the mechanic for work, not for the home mechanic, but for the mechanic who wants to have his own shop, but the entry point, the cost to start your own shop is so high. When you start talking about lifts and tools and insurance, but if you had the same concept you're talking about for those trades, for mechanics, you've got a lot of talented mechanics out there, both in just traditional, you know, car maintenance and repair, as well as customization, that could use that sort of entry level assistance on the entrepreneurial side.
So, I mean, for mechanics, it might be that. For other tradespeople, it's more the makerspace that might have a mini machine shop, right? Or a mini woodworking shop, right? All the equipment they really can't afford to have themselves and still, like, you know, really turn a profit. But if they're sharing it and they can schedule their time, which, you know, obviously we have apps for that now, then that helps to build them as entrepreneurs. And create a kind of maker community, if you will, or even a trade community, which does evolve over time. So, you know, if you know a plumber, good chance they know someone who does tile and someone who does bathroom fixtures or doors or whatever else it is. And so, you know, that kind of referral network and everything else. But if they're able to share some of those big ticket items somehow, that's a really interesting approach. To, you know, what I call small business development, Sharita. I think it's a really cool idea. Well, I just haven't seen it done anywhere. I mean, the makerspace at UC had, you know, almost, I mean, we had 2 CNC machines, but someone had to help you with them. We had an industrial lathe, or I'm sorry, an industrial router, wood router. We had industrial 3D printers, which is a big deal these days. Most of the people using them were students, and, you know, students were running their own small businesses out of there. But we hadn't really curated it well enough to get other businesses in there to make good use of it. And, you know, we thought of it more as a prototyping space for the big guys than anything else. But I do think that, you know, from a trades development, getting into this entrepreneurial space where, no, I don't need to have 6 plumbers on staff. I need to have 6 plumbers on speed dial, right? But we've got pre-arrangements and that kind of thing. So I don't know. I mean, it's a whole, there's a big shift coming. I think it's going to come fast.
Completely. Well, and so the Chattanooga Public Library has, I think they call it the fourth floor, but essentially it has a podcast studio. It's got a sewing room that's got equipment and machines. It's got industrial construction equipment that you can rent out. But again, it's like the city funds it. The city staffs it. So you have staffers that have, you know, particular expertise in an area and oversee those different things. It's got the 3D industrial printers, all of that kind of stuff. And you're right, there are local folks running their businesses out of the library. But hey, it is what it is. But I don't know. But again, it's sort of the evolution of space and how we help startups. But the next piece is sort of that business assistance that Kevin talks about. It's like, great, you know, you've got people kind of toying with it, but at what point do you kind of push people out the nest and say, get your business license and get started?
Right. And who are the coaches to help them do that? Right. And, you know, what are the systems in place to make that happen? And we've kind of always done that. We've always had like small business assistants, but I think we're probably going to have to double or triple down on it. I mean, it's all going to change. And maybe for a future podcast, I think one of the things I'd like to talk about is kind of how all of this we've been talking about today fits in with what I'll call the traditional cluster model.
Yeah.
And part of the reason I bring that up is because there's some pretty good evidence that talent is attracted to a cluster of talent. And I like to describe that the way I used to talk to the businesses that I would talk to about this was, look, the talent you want to recruit that you don't want to go to California or the Northeast or some other hotspot, Austin, wherever else it is, they have to see their next five jobs here. And by the way, that's only going to take them 10 years. So, you know, do we have a cluster of companies that shows them a cluster of opportunities for them as a software engineer or, hell, I don't know, an electrician or an electrical engineer or a coder or whatever else it is? If we don't have those next five jobs in their mind lined up for them, then they're going to the coast because they know they're there. And they're planning on changing jobs at least every 2 years, if not sooner.
And that kind of, and I'm not sure where it fits, but that makes me think of the thing you forwarded me on LinkedIn the other day. As we think about that cluster model for talent, what's going to attract talent? We talk about quality of life. We talk about the ability of cities to kind of deliver. We talk about tourism and especially tourism cities. Yes. And you sent me a thing where I think somebody had said that, and I think I wrote it down here, that today's traveler is tomorrow's talent. Right. So those places that are clustering tourist talent in their tourist mode,
right.
How do you capitalize on that? I remember when I worked for Miami Beach, we'd have big conventions, we'd target them at the golf course when they were doing their convention golf tournament and to try and expose the opportunities that we had in Miami Beach as we had these decision makers. More on the corporate side coming.
Yeah, we used to do that for businesses, right?
Right. But now
we actually have to do it for talent. And how do we, you know, what are the strategies around? I think it's a great idea.
You know, how do you recruit talent at Disney World?
Thank you for joining us once again in our conversation about talent. Please join us again next time when Ken, Sharita, and I will talk about recruiting and attracting talent and how talent attraction is their number one economic development strategy now. And the number one thing you need to be focused on in attracting talent is quality of life and lifestyle choices of that talent that you're looking to attract and retain. Thank you for tuning into Flareheads. This podcast is dedicated to the entrepreneurs and the small business owners who toil every day to build and grow their dream, and also to those public officials that understand the perspective of those dreamers and who actively support them, understanding the positive impact they have on their community's quality of life. The Flareheads podcast is hosted and executive produced by myself, Kevin Crowder, alongside executive producer and senior editor, Julian Duque. And it is a production of the Business Flare Publishing Group. Please connect with us on all social media. You will find us there as Business Flair. And you can download our ebook, Governing for Economic Development, from Amazon in English and Spanish. The theme song is Surf Rat, an original composition performed by Miami's heavy metal band McFisty and written by Kevin Crowder and the rest of the band. And a special thanks goes out to our tribe of Flareheads, our team, our clients, our friends, our partners, our family, and the rest of Flarehead Nation for your support and inspiration. Please join us again. Thank you.